This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I'm driving home in a little bit different way because I just had dinner with a buddy and we had a really nice dinner together. And so I'm actually driving home from the restaurant at this point. Should be about normal length podcast. Maybe a little shorter because the normal length ones are getting to be a little bit long at this point. And I really kind of need to like taper this back because these are supposed to be, you know, 20-minute drives home. And some of these podcasts have gone like to 40 minutes. So that's not good. Anyways, it's been a good week. Have learned a lot of stuff this week. Have had some good confirmations that have come in that we're moving in the right direction. So at least we hope it's the right direction. So that seems like it's going fine. Still writing, still working along. I'm up to 70. I'm really close to 76,000 words. I'm going to be a little bit short on time this evening, but I'm pretty sure that I can get to, you know, another 500 words down tonight, which means that I'm only 3,500 words away from my goal. And excuse me, I just had something to eat there, and some of it came up when I opened my mouth. You know, I don't think there's going to be any problem, I don't think, getting to 80,000 words before I swing back and start working on the production version of number four, book four. And of course, right now I'm writing on book five. So I've just got to get that finished up. I'm really hoping that maybe tomorrow I can lay down 2,500 words or so. If I do that, that would put me within 1,000 words. And then, you know, then it's just cakewalk. And I just have to cakewalk it out before I kind of put it on hiatus and then come back to it later. I'm writing a section where I have a female character that I don't quite have mapped. And so I'm, you know, taking a couple of runs at it from different directions, trying to find that right combination. And it's really interesting because I thought I had her mapped and I thought I knew where we were going with it and what the point was. And then I heard back from a beta reader who had commented on this character in book four and how that there was some confusion in her mind over this character. And I responded to her as to why the character was acting that way. But that then led me to think, you know, maybe you need to change this up a little bit. Keep what you have in book four, but then change it up sufficiently to really explain her much better in book five. So that got me a little closer, but it's still not quite right. It's just not, it hasn't settled, but I feel like I'm getting closer. And, you know, in the latest incarnation, as I was thinking about it when I was driving in this morning, I'm closer. I don't know if I'm actually going to get this resolved before I put this book on hiatus, which is okay, because sometimes it's really good when you're in the middle of some kind of creative thing. Sometimes it's really good just to pull away a little bit. Obviously, if you pull away and don't come back to it, it never gets done. But there is, I was watching something, reading something about procrastination and creativity, and the crux of it was that sometimes it's better as you're pushing and pushing and being creative. If you kind of get to a slowdown spot, sometimes it's better if you just back up a little bit and do something else. And I find that that is true. I will write for so many hours and then I'll take a little break, go out, read some news, you know, stand up, stretch a little bit, just let my brain kind of reset and then sit back down and head into it again, you know. So I have found that to be true. But anyway, so I'm expecting in the next couple of days to be at 80,000 words on book 5, which was just where I wanted to be at this point. Happy about that. And then next week, the plan is to swing off and go back to book 4 and get started working on that. And in fact, I'm getting back to that just slightly earlier than I thought I would be. But that's good as well. Because I've got to do something different. Have to do something different with the opening ketchup chapters. Not like ketchup and mustard, but ketchup. C-A-T-C-H U-P. I was trying to figure out if I spelled catch correctly. C-A-T-C-H. I did. Because that thing is, it's called characters and terminology right now, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and it can't. Because if it does, it's going to end up being a book all its own. You know, once I get farther along this course. So I've got to, I really have got to get that under control. And I had one of my beta readers suggest a vertical timeline type thing with events on both sides of the, you know, both sides of the timeline kind of going down the page. And I think that's a really good idea. So I was going to wait and do it in book 5, but then I thought, no, you should just get that started in book 4. So I'm going to change that, and then at some point I got to go back to book 3 and book 2 and redo those as well. But that's, I'll get that done at some point. It'll be fine. So I need to restructure that before I start working on the production version of book 4. So that's good, because I can get started on that like on Sunday, and then, you know, Monday night I can probably work on that a little bit, and Tuesday night I can probably work on that a little bit, and hopefully I'll have it done by then so that I can then turn around and start putting in all the edits. So it's been, you know, it's been good. I think this book is going fine. I still don't know exactly how things are going to land. And in fact, I have switched the name of the book. I have switched the parable in the book. So I'm going to have to rewrite a little bit right at the start of the book. But that's fine. That's fine. We'll get that done. And it means that I don't really have an end of the book at this point. I kind of know what's going on, but it'll come. It'll be fine. That's the cool thing about this. You're walking in the fog, and you just keep walking, and the fog keeps parting, and then eventually you hit clear skies. So it's good. Anyways, there was a TED Talk that I thought was really interesting, not necessarily for what the guy was saying, although that was very interesting and impressive, but it brought home again to me this idea that it is the glory of God to hide a thing and the glory of kings to seek it out. The name of the TED Talk was How to Read the Genome and Build a Human Being. This was by Ricardo Sabatini. Ricardo Sabatini, I think. And anyways, it's very interesting because he started off talking about how he's always been fascinated with 3D printing. He said, because with 3D printing, and they are cool. 3D printers are cool. He said, a 3D printer needs three elements. It needs a bit of information, some raw material, some energy, and it can produce any object that wasn't there before. And he said, that's pretty cool. And he said, came a point in his life when he realized that his mom was a 3D printer. So, because he said, you know, she took a little bit of information, which is between my father and my mom in this case, some raw energy, or some raw elements, some energy in the same media, that is food. And he said, after several months, she produced me. And he said, I was non-existent before. And that's kind of an interesting way to put it. And frankly, obviously, it is a spectacularly complex process and utterly awe-inspiring. That you can have these two little things, sperm and egg, and they can come together. And they can, using the mother as a host, begin manufacturing a human being. I mean, it is spectacular. It's just spectacular. So he was saying that one of the things that he thought early on was, well, I wonder if, you know, you could, like, print a 3D, you know, have a 3D printer that would print a human being. He said, so how much information would that take if you just tried to reproduce, like, this baby? All the molecules that are in this baby. And how many thumb drives would you fill? And he said, he was studying physics at the beginning, so he said he thought he'd just take a look at this. And, like, you know, human beings were these giant, gigantic Lego pieces, and locking them all together and doing the building blocks, and how many do you actually need? And he said, so he figured it all out, because he thought if he can list all the elements in a human being, he can build it. So he figured it all out, and then figured out how much information you would need. And he said, when you run the numbers, it is actually astonishingly large. And he calculated out, he said, if he saves that information to a thumb drive, he's actually going to need to fill an entire Titanic full of thumb drives 2,000 times over. That's how much information is in the finished product. And he said, this is the miracle of life. He said, every time you see from now on a pregnant lady, she is assembling the biggest amount of information you will ever encounter. She said, forget big data, forget anything you've heard of. This is the biggest amount of information that exists. Now, of course, babies are not the size of thumb drives filling up 2,000 Titanics. And in fact, what causes this baby to develop is minuscule and infinitesimal. Tiny. It's so tiny. If I've got my facts right, there are two copies of it in every single cell in your body. Not one, but two copies of it. DNA. And this is where I started to smile when he was talking about this. He said, but fortunately, nature is much smarter than a young physicist. Okay. And in 4 billion years has managed to pack this information in a small crystal we call DNA. This is not just a small crystal. This is infinitesimal. And you actually need, I think, like an electron microscope scanning this to be able to see it. I mean, it is infinitesimally small. And yet it has enough information in it to build a baby. It's incredible. He said, we got our first look at it in 1950. He said, it took us 40 more years to finally poke inside a human cell, take out this crystal, unroll it, and read it. He said, the code turns out to be a fairly simple alphabet. See, A, T, C, G. And he said, to build a human, you need 3 billion of them. 3 billion. And he said, you know, how much is that? He said, that number doesn't make any sense to us. He said, I thought I would give you a practical example. And this is where it got fascinating for me. I thought I would give you a practical example of what DNA looks like. 3 billion. And remember, every cell in our body has two copies of it. Well, you know, except the sperm and the egg. Wait, is that right? Anyway. There's a whole bunch of copies of this in your body. So, anyways, he thought he would bring out Craig Venter. So he said, he'll be our example of DNA. And he said, no, I'm not going to bring the man in the flesh out here. He said, what I'm going to do is, he said, I want to bring out his genome. He said, and it's the genome of Craig Venter, printed page by page, letter by letter, 260,000 pages of information, 450 kilograms, which is really close to 1,000 pounds, shipped from the United States to Canada, thanks to Lulu.com. Said it was an amazing feat. So, you know, they roll it out. 262,000 pages of information. And it's, they have those little kind of carts that you have in a library where books are stacked up. And I don't know how many of these carts that they roll out. But it's, it looks like it's 4 to 5 shelves tall. And it's about books stacked back to back to back to back to back to back to back, or side by side by side by side by side. And I think it was about 10, maybe 10 feet wide. You know, just book after book after book after book after book. I don't know if they had like 500 pages per book or like 1,000 pages per book. I don't know what they had in it. You know, he brings all these books out, and he kind of wanders over to one book, and he pulls it out, and he said, let's go to a specific part of this. He said, let me read this to you. A-A-G-A-A-T-A-T-A. He said, I know to you it just sounds like mute letters, but he said, this sequence gives the color of the eyes to Craig. Then he went over, I'm backing into my garage. He went over to another section, and he pulled it out. He had a bookmark, and he pulls it out, flips over to that section, and he says, let's go to this section, and he reads something else there. And he said, this is chromosome 14, book 132. So there were at least 132 books. As you might expect, A-T-T-C-T-T-G-A-T-T. He said, this human is lucky, because if you miss just 2 letters in this position, 2 letters of our 3 billion, he will be condemned to a terrible disease, cystic fibrosis. We have no cure for it. We don't know how to solve it. And it's just 2 letters difference from what we are. It's amazing. It's just amazing. He went on to say, a wonderful book, a mighty book, a mighty book that helped me understand and show you something quite remarkable. Every one of you, what makes me me and you you, is just about 5 million of these letters. He said, it's half a book. He said, for the rest, we are absolutely identical. 500 pages out of 262,000 pages is the miracle of life that you are. Said the rest, we all share it. We think about that again. When we think that we are different, this is the amount that we share. The vast majority we share. And there are only minor differences. So that was cool. Well, one of the things the team that he's on is doing is they were trying to see if they could virtualize, if they could just by looking at the DNA predict things. And so they're using big data, and on one side they're putting all the descriptive of a given human, and on the other side they're putting DNA, and they're letting the machine crunch against it and see if it could find patterns. And he said, little by little, he said, we started working with the common traits, he said, and that worked out pretty well. He said, can we predict height? He said, can we read the books and predict your height? And he said, well, actually, we can to within about 5 centimeters of precision. That's pretty impressive. He said, BMI is fairly connected to your lifestyle, but we can get in the ballpark 8 kilograms of precision. He said, eye color? Yeah, he said, we can do that, 80% accuracy. Skin color? Yeah, we can do that, 80% accuracy. Can we predict age? We can, because apparently the code changes during your life. He said, it gets shorter, you lose pieces, it gets insertions. We read the signals when we make a model. Then what they tried to do, and this is pretty impressive, is they tried to recreate the human's face just by reading the human's DNA. That was pretty impressive. Now, you know, obviously when we see, he says, when you see these two pictures, you're going to try to see how similar they are. And he said, I'm asking you to try to do something. Look really closely and see if you can see the differences. He said, we're not perfect by any means. He said, and there are things that we can't control, like whether or not you have a beard or not. He said, but it was pretty impressive when he put it up there. He said, you know, they're making some progress. And of course, the whole idea is eventually they want to take this to personalized medicine to know exactly what the best way is to treat your diseases and all that sort of thing. But of course, beyond that, I was just thinking, law enforcement, you know, they're going to take this DNA someday, they're going to run the DNA, and they're going to come up with a composite and go look for that person, which, you know, what they had right now, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not just the blob. It has nose shape. It has lip shape. It has eye socket shape, you know, hairline. I mean, it's got all that kind of stuff. He said, what we're doing now is we are touching on the very inner detail of how life works. He said, it's a revolution that cannot be confined in the domain of science or technology. This must be a global conversation. We must start to think of the future we're building as a humanity. We need to interact with creatives, with artists, with philosophers. Everyone is involved because it's the future of our species, without fear, but with the understanding that the decisions that we make in the next year will change the course of history forever. I've said it before on this podcast. This next 20 years is going to be amazing. It's just going to be incredible. The discoveries and the advances that are going to be made are just phenomenal. And I really think, as I've said before, as we're moving forward, as we decipher more and more about how things work, and we continue to see how beautifully everything is balanced, and the wonder of the biological machinery, I think it's going to get increasingly hard to believe that this all just happened, even when giving yourself 4 billion years to bring it about. I think it's just going to get harder and harder. Now, people will come up with all other ways. Well, maybe life actually started on Venus and then it floated over here, yada, yada. Well, maybe we're actually implanted by aliens here, yada, yada, yada. But this idea that something like DNA could automagically form and then become this incredible scripting language that can control life. It's, you know, from a technologist standpoint, this really is tantamount to saying that Watson, the supercomputer, just evolved on its own. Or the AlphaGo supercomputer just managed to get created all on its own. Because, frankly, to me, the complexities of biological life in the programming and the amazing machinery in biological life vastly outcomplicates anything that we've managed to build. It is vastly more complicated than anything we've built. And we would just scoff if someone brought us in and said, this computer built itself, what? But for now, some have to continue that illusion because, frankly, it makes people feel extremely small if they would acknowledge that there is a being out there that could actually engineer this. Because that would be an amazing being indeed. This is Phil Farron, and I've made it home.